Welcome to Blightbringers, a Legion of Everblight-focused podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tyrone, and joining me this week is Ryan. Ryan, welcome back.
Hello. I'm basically surviving on spite at this point, so that's how my life's going. Good to be here, though.
You should get a doctor to look at that.
I'll think about it.
All right. And actually, also here this week, Cutter. Good to have you back.
Ahoy, everyone. Yes, I'm back.
That's right. You have returned from the Grimkin to talk about Legion, maybe a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. That's good enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this episode, we weren't sure if we were going to get one out before the end of the year, but this is a perfect opportunity to talk about our year in review. We're just going to kind of gab about what we did, who we played, some good times and good people, and hopefully you guys enjoy the show. Ryan, why don't you talk about your tournament series really quick, and then we can go into maybe some events that you attended.
I did. It went from, how many weeks was it? Or months? I think 8 months.
Wow, that's pretty good.
That sounds right. It was basically one event a month, so it wasn't too bad. Started, I want to say March. We're going to go with March, and then ended in November. Yeah, that sounds right. We traveled throughout basically the entire state of New York, from as far west as Buffalo, as far south as Candor, which is actually south of Ithaca, which I thought was, you know, right on the border to Pennsylvania, but apparently there's a little bit of normal New York before you get into Pennsylvania, and then as far east as Poughkeepsie. So it was a lot of fun to run, and it was a lot more work than I honestly expected it to be.
Yeah, why don't you tell us about it a bit?
Sure. So we started in March. The basic premise was that, like I said, there's going to be one event about a month. It was talked to some people in different areas. We went to all different stores throughout the state, got the store owners involved, and the idea was every event would have a point limit attached to it. So if, say, I think we did top six, you would get, you know, first place would get 6 points, second place would get 5, third place would get 4, all the way down to 6, so it wasn't just the top three that were getting something. And then if you were basically an out-of-town player, your points doubled. So if there was an event in Buffalo and you were from Rochester and you drove out to play and you got first, you got 12 points. The thought process there was that there's a lot of, especially in, you know, New York State, we have a lot of different metas, and a lot of them don't necessarily travel as much. A lot of it is kind of like, oh, well, I could go an hour to play at your store, but why would I do that when I can just play in my own? And I was hoping to incentivize people to travel a little bit, to go outside their normal meta, to go outside what they're used to, and, you know, see the rest of the players, to make friends, to meet more people, and to get a chance to maybe play into things that don't exist in your, you know, local meta. If I don't have, say, a Scorn player, and I know there's one an hour away, but I never drive there and he never comes to me, well, then my pairing never has to deal with Scorn. Whereas when we started doing this, it was fun to see, you know, the different list compositions people would come up with, the things that they would build for their own meta and think, oh yeah, this is really good, until the first time you hit, like, Grimkin with all the clocks, or Scar 1 with all the stalkers, and that's maybe not a thing that you're used to, and then suddenly you have to find a way to beat it, or you end up coming back next month going, hey, I had to make changes to deal with this thing that I normally don't have to deal with. So I think it worked out pretty well. We had, like I said, people from literally all over the state come and play. We had, I think it was every meta represented in the finals. I think I might have been missing one of them because somebody couldn't make it. That sounds right.
That's awesome.
And it was a lot of fun.
I wanted to ask what the points did.
So probably should have said that. Yeah, you're right. So the points were what got you into the finals. The finals was like an invitational. So it was the top two scorers. The points were the top two scorers from each individual meta would get into the finals. And then there was 4 or 5 wildcard spots that anybody could take, didn't matter where you were playing out of. So there's, you know, only a guaranteed two spots, so maybe you didn't have to be the best player in Rochester, you know, because maybe those two people would always show up and score all the points. But if you were consistently getting, you know, third, fourth, fifth, and you built up points over 8 months, you could still get into the finals based on, hey, I might not have gotten, you know, first or second, but I was I was constantly doing well, and that got me in.
I'm going to go with consistent.
There we go. That's a word. I know words. I know the best words.
Oh, easy now. We also know who else knows the best words.
Exactly.
Well, that's great. Like, that's really a cool position that you found yourself in this year, Ryan. I'm really proud of you for doing that.
Yeah, like I said, it was a lot of fun, and I think we're going to change things up for next year when I do it. After talking with some people, I think the point system was a good idea to start with, but I think if you had to miss a couple months, it became kind of problematic because, well, I have to win or I can't get in, and it made it so that people almost didn't want to bother once it got later into the season.
Right.
So I think for next year, what we're going to do is the winner automatically gets a spot in. We're going to do the first round pairings for the finals based off points totals so that everyone still has a reason to come and get more points, kind of like how Warfare Weekend does it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then also still have wildcard spots that are based solely off points. So you don't necessarily have to win an event, but if you do well, you can still get in.
Awesome. Better. Why don't we reminisce about one of your experiences this year?
Sure. I'll actually jump right on to what we were just talking about. Sure. So one of my goals for this year was to drive community engagement. And I think I listened back to the episode where we were talking about this. I think they were 28 and 29. And I just started the mentor program in New York City. And had planned to go to a bunch of cons, stuff like that. And one of the things that I put together recently, I'm actually finishing up what I'm going to have as the final points model probably today, is an invitational event similar to like Star Wars or Baltimore or, you know, one of the other events that kind of drive area engagement. And I wanted to get your thoughts on it a little bit, because right now it's a trial. We're gonna basically do something similar to what Warfare Weekend's doing, but with some more sensitivity to kind of what my goals are for it. So basically what we're doing is I got six shops in. They're the closest six shops that I have available. So two in Brooklyn, two in Northern Jersey, one in southern upstate New York, as far as New York City people would call it, and okay, one in Long Island. And what we're going to do is run at least one event at all those shops. I'm not sure if I'm going to permit more than one at a shop. But basically, you get points at an event, and the points that you get are based on your placement. So whether you're first, second, third, fourth, I think I'm probably only going to do the top four in that regard as far as those bonus points count. Your record, so if you're X and O, X and one, so forth, because there are some three and out events around here. That's like a thing that's kind of caught on in this area. So sure, sometimes there are two undefeated people or something at the end. So your placement, your record, and then the number of players, so that it accounts for like rounds and things like that. So the number of players right now is a bonus, and the number of rounds is a more straightforward number. I won't go into all of the specifics for the math there, but essentially the way it's set up is you get points for each event. You carry those points with you, and for the top eight, we're doing an invitational at one of the local guys' house who has like a pretty cool gaming lair in his basement, Dan Sedman. He's the one who's been doing some of the kind of like silly videos about like Imran News and stuff like that, if you've seen those online. His YouTube channel's Pop and Drop. But he has a streaming setup that's pretty awesome. So basically what we're going to do is have everyone go there for the finals and stream one game. There'll be three rounds. So stream all three rounds and put that all out to the community. And I'm going to try to get some guest casting, because I used to run the broadcast environment in the esports company that I worked for last year. So it would be really cool to get something like that going and get some, I don't know who would get involved in it, but I have a couple of people who had expressed interest. But
sounds like a good time.
Yeah, sounds legit.
So the way it's going to work is you take your top two scores from any events that you've been to, and that's what gives you both a spot in the finals and will seed you in the finals. So what that means, the way it's designed, is if you win a small event, it does not guarantee you a spot in the finals, because someone who you know, gets second place in a couple larger events will outscore you probably. Kind of depends on how many people show up, but that's the idea, is that if you win a large event, you're probably in, but it kind of depends on how big the other events end up being. So the goal is to get people to go to more than one event, but to make it so that they won't grind. They won't feel like they have to grind. That was something that John LeClaire had told me about Brawltomore when they tried to do points, was if you just keep accumulating points, people feel like, and this is what you were saying too, that you can feel like you kind of fall behind. So I wanted to do the top two, which kind of fits this area. Maybe it doesn't work as well in a broader meta, but the goal is to get people to move around. And then there's at least two guaranteed spots that aren't going to be winners, right? Because you can only win, like you only have one winner of each event. And if there's only six shops, you have at least two that are going to be people who did not win an event but still get in. So that's kind of the model I'm working with. I've done a bunch of different points formulas, have shared that out with some people, gotten feedback on it. And right now it's in a pretty good place where I feel like, you know, if you win an event, you're not guaranteed to be in, but you're pretty likely to be in if you go to another event and get any type of placement. So that's the hope. It also encourages people to stay through the whole event, because you only get points if you finish the event.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But the bonus for the number of players is the original players, and then there's another component, another variable, that's the number of rounds. So even if you end up having 14 people, and that could be a four-round event, but it only goes three rounds, you still kind of get something from that. So I'm trying to balance all those factors, but also make it logistically easy to keep track of. So it's a pretty simple formula. I just need to do a few more runs of it. But that's what I'm doing right now. I haven't given it a name yet, so I'm kind of waiting for inspiration there. But it'll begin running soon, and we'll run for a couple months, and then we'll have the finals in the spring sometime, probably, like early spring. So that should be cool. All the shops are in. Everything's like set to go. I just need to get the final points out.
Yeah, it checks out. It seems like a really neat idea, and I'm glad you guys are kind of close enough where you can do it throughout the winter months. Mm-hmm. That was my big concern, was that going, you know, cross-state versus a relatively small area, like just in the city, it, you know as well as I do how the roads can get in certain areas in the winter, so I wanted to be done with all of it before snow started falling. But
yeah,
I mean, you kind of don't have that problem in a relatively smaller area, so
kind of. You can take a train to a fairly short distance from all of these places, from any of them to any of the other ones. Some of them are like a little farther, like taking a train from northern, like southern upstate New York to Long Island would be kind of a haul, but you could definitely do it.
Yeah, let me know when that one is, because depending on location, I might make the drive down just to crash it and screw with all of you.
Yeah, that one's in Poughkeepsie, so it's at Champion.
Okay.
And Maplewood, and the only game in town are the New Jersey ones. Brooklyn Strategist and Carcosa Club are the ones in Brooklyn. And then Brothers Grimm is the one in Long Island.
It's still like a 6-hour drive. How much do I like you, Cutter, on a scale of 1 to 10? That's the question right now.
I mean, I'm going to try and get up there for some events too, and I'll see you at conventions and stuff. So, I'll use that as a segue to talk about conventions. So I went to a bunch of conventions this year, Captain Con, Nova,
Southern Ontario Open,
Boker Brawl, the War Machine weekend qualifier at Millennium. It'll be interesting to see how that works this year. And went to a bunch of other steamrollers and stuff like that. So my goal this year is to go to more of them. Go to the ATC, Nova, Captain Con, Boker Brawl, Southern Ontario Open, probably some other ones. I want to get to some that are a bit south. I haven't gone below Nova, so it would be cool to get to like the East Coast Rumble or Crucible, or getting to some of the bigger ones. Like LVO is probably out of the question, but I'd really like to make it to Werfer Weekend, Lock and Load, stuff like that. For me, I think in general, I just wanted to track my games and progress as a player. I did not track my games. I gave up on that completely because I felt like I was spending too much time doing that, and I kept having to go back. So I ended up just kind of chilling out a little bit on that part of it, but I just got a new phone, so maybe I'll start tracking my games again now that I have that. I am looking back at my notes to see what it was that I actually was working on. But in general, I think I did kind of what I wanted to do. I wanted to get to the finals of a Masters, which I did. I clocked out, healing my Clockatrice, or I would have won. So it was pretty close to getting a little bit farther than just the finals, but it was cool. Made day two Masters at a couple of conventions and ended up switching to Grimkin to be able to play more beasts. Is that something I really like?
Ooh.
And because I would still be playing Kalos one, honestly. Like I know that's what would be going on. And I got so sick of dealing with all those flight bases. And yeah, I played that match so many times. Not anywhere near how much Jake played it, but yeah, it's
because you lack imagination. That's the real problem.
No, I get really, really focused on competitive merit. And I felt like that list had a really high skill ceiling. And it would also just roll over people who didn't play into it properly.
Yeah. Like, so, basically every time I played it locally, I just ran everything at my opponent and they were like, oh, I lose. And I'm like, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, you needed to be thinking about how to not lose when you deployed, going, and then for the next couple turns until you ended up losing. So, yeah, I feel like that list did teach me a lot, though, going into how to play that. I ended up making my own version of it, and I think a lot of the fundamentals from Legion definitely transfer well, especially because we were running at such a deficit in terms of ability to trade efficiently, and so the ability to protect your stuff, all of the positioning, things like that, are a real big deal. Something I've had to learn with Grimkin that's really interesting is going to bottom of seven, because you know I've always struggled with clock, and you kind of how to plan your game in a way that actually gives you the ability to do that, and also not just rushing for those scenario victories, because I feel like you can do that in SR 2019, but a lot of the time it's not a good investment. This was something that Ben Beckman was talking about on the meta with Jay, and he basically said that's chiefly a US thing, where people will kind of try to make a really quick grab for scenario and throw everything away and then lose the long game. So that's something I've had to pay a little bit more attention to as a Grimkin player, because they just don't have the threat extension for the most part. Bump does a little bit. They're not as fast. They don't orient around things as well. They don't have much in way of guns except for like some sprays. And so the game is very different, but a lot of the fundamentals transfer over. So that's been really cool. Haven't done another faction in a while.
Yeah. Can we expect you back at Legion anytime soon?
Well, right now I feel like the ability to transport Grimkin in a little like lunchbox size thing is pretty amazing in New York. So hopefully I'll be getting a little bit more space this year and we'll be able to maybe get a car again. We'll see how that works out. Which would allow me to play some of the, like, carry my Legion hockey bag around with me again.
Yeah.
But I think I would need to be enticed. And I really liked how Mark II Legion played. Lots of powerful beasts doing fun things with powerful casters. And I know Legion, according to Hungerford, has kind of a bigger comprehensive update, like the Troll Bloods are getting. And based on what I've heard from him and some of the conversations, they're focusing on themes. And so I would anticipate that one of the themes kind of gets an overhaul, like what we're going to see out of Troll Bloods. And maybe some core mechanics will change, like with Burrow. For Legion, I don't know what that would be. Maybe the Spawning Vessel will actually score things again. But yeah. I think Legion.
You're expecting a lot there, just saying.
Legion has some really, really, really cool synergies that go from model to model to model, model to model. And that's what I like about the faction a lot. So I think if some of those things get tuned up, that's what would really pique my interest, or if someone kind of uncovers something there. So, you know, like having warrior models that you do something with. And then they die and they go into corpses, and then the spawning vessel makes a lesser, and the lesser goes out and does something, and then that becomes a corpse, and maybe you have incubi popping out in there somewhere with the infantry models. So that kind of stuff I think is really cool. So that type of thing and being able to play Beast Heavy would be really, really attractive.
Okay, fair enough. You know, like I know Legion definitely has struggled with beasts for the last little while. I know, Ryan, you're just going to shout Abby 1 into my face the next time you see me.
That'd be too easy. I'll staple it on your back instead.
All right.
So everybody else knows, and you become a walking billboard.
Fair.
Yeah, I think Ogryn are really strong. I actually think there are some lists that Legion's going to be able to do extraordinarily well with in this new meta. It'll be really interesting to see what trolls become, because they're getting a pretty big update. And the Ogryn side of Legion and some of the other tools that are available are really good at killing Archons too. And I feel like there's a new meta coming, and Legion does have some cool stuff coming there.
Hey Cutter, what's a good way to kill a Void Archon?
A good way to kill a Void Archon?
Yes, I would like your input on this.
So, being run by whom?
Literally anybody. Those things are annoying as shit, and I want to know how to kill them.
Well, I think Void Archons are... they die when they commit, usually. Unless you permit them to commit and then hop out. So usually they're like a one and done. So the easiest way to kill them is let them kill whatever they want and then kill them.
Ah, yes. Great, the Lord of the Feast method.
The Lord of the Feast method, yeah.
Because that worked out so well for him.
I think the casters that run Void Archons really well offer some ability to protect them on the way up the field. Obviously, the list does something with that, too. But the Void Archon, like Denegra 1, is disgusting with them, because she makes them into, you know, absolute monsters, and they're really tough to kill with her. So I think Convergence will be really interesting to see how that goes with them. But as far as killing them, like, you have to... Legion has a lot of sprays and they have a lot of sprays that are fairly accurate and or boostable, and that can get a little extra damage in there sometimes. So I think having a list that leverages sprays is a great way to get to avoid Archon, because that means shield guards aren't going to work. That means you might be able to get in and hit some other stuff too, but focus on the Archon, and then if you get some other bonus damage, great. People aren't playing Thrones as much now, but Thrones are a great way to get chip damage into things. The big thing with the Void Archon is it's going to hang pretty far back for a while, and then it's going to come in and do something. So you can sometimes make it so that they just never feel like they want to come in. Sometimes you can threaten them with like Carnivian sprays or whatever to keep them away, because you know it's difficult to actually stay out of a Carnivian spray unless you're body blocking. obviously, things like Ogryn will kill them, but you can't get to them usually, so that can cause some problems. But I think one of the bigger things is really just having the threat projection to make their commitment suboptimal. And if they don't respect that, you just go for them. Because even though, you know, you might be trading down a little bit, it kind of depends on how valuable that is to your list. So if you have stuff that's going to get melted by their ridiculous spray, or you really don't want Dark Shroud on something, etc., then it's something that you need to keep track of. Or like the Entropic can be a real big problem for some Legion lists, so like Ogryn in particular. If they don't have shield guards, there are some Legion guns that are prominent, like the Blightbringer, that will blow the thing up in a couple turns. So I think Legion has some of the tools. You also have really cheap arc nodes in Legion, so maybe you get some chip damage in like that, and that ends up making it soft enough that you can just pick it up with a spray.
Yeah, why don't we just talk about like what do you guys think was more influential in terms of releases? Do you think it was the Infernals? Do you think it was the Archons, or do you think Morrowinds?
So all the Morrowind stuff isn't out yet. I don't think.
Okay.
Like I still think we're missing the medium base Morrowind infantry and the small base stuff that came out.
Yeah.
Like, I know a bunch of the solos are on the schedule, and they either just came out or they're just about to. But okay. I think when all of that stuff finally hits, that's going to make a splash. I think Infernals are neat. I don't think that they shifted the meta significantly yet. But yeah,
I think the buy-in on them is maybe too high.
See, I don't know that it is. I think that there's a lot of room to explore with them still. But it's like everything else, right? When it comes out, people go for the stuff that is obviously powerful. Sure. So, like, you saw Infernal Sloan because that's a very easy and obvious, like, hey, I can fully load every single one of these hunters and just shoot you off the table. Right? So yeah. I think there's a lot of room to explore with them. I think, like, all three of the actual Infernal Masters play really different games and are kind of interesting. But I think with, like, the second list, it's going to change a lot depending on who's playing it, what they want to see out of it, and what they want to do with it.
Okay.
And then I think the Archons, again, are kind of neat, but like, I don't think they're shifting the meta necessarily as much as you're giving people tools to deal with things in the meta while asking very particular questions themselves. And it's really just a game of, okay, well, this answers this thing, but also asks this question. And now, you know, your opponent has to go, well, I need to be able to answer that question while maybe this loses some viability because this thing exists.
Okay, fair enough. Better. What do you think was the most influential release this year?
Well, this year is definitely, I feel like I'd have to go back and look at all the releases.
Well, you got new Grimkin stuff, right?
Yeah, well, the Grimkin stuff was impactful. It definitely brought that faction back into the limelight. I felt like it was lagging a little bit. And then they came back pretty strong. As far as like what is most impactful out of all the Oblivion stuff, I think I actually feel like the Archons might be more impactful from my perspective than all the other stuff. I think Infernals are at a high level. Recently, Infernals have really made an impact because a lot of the competitive players who just got through, you know, the con season or whatever, are picking them up because they're really high skill cap. They do a lot of weird stuff, and they play on like a lot of other things, and they have the potential to be very powerful. So I think they might end up having a longer term impact. The general meta, I don't think, has seen that as much. However, I have seen Archons all over the effing place. So they feel like, to me, that they're very impactful because you just see them everywhere.
Yeah.
The Primal Archon is, you know, maybe lagging a little bit. It's the only Archon I can play in the two factions I have right now. So I think that I see, like, every tournament round that I've been in for the past, like, couple months have been all Archons. I see a lot of them. They're very strong models, and they just add a lot. So I would probably mark them as the most influential from my perspective.
Yeah.
It's also because, like, the Void Archon obviously does specific things against Grimkin. So that one's pretty good. Thamorite Archon does too. And I think the new themes are something to think about too.
Oh, the combo really themes? Impactful.
Yeah. And yeah. It's, yeah, like the, I'm like the Diet Cador or whatever, being, you know, you just have a Cator caster and then everything else is other factions.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the Warriors of the Old Faith or whatever. I think those are going to have the potential to be really impactful. We're starting to see that now. And the, what were the other things that were coming out recently? Oh, the Morrowind stuff. Yep. I feel like those are mostly impactful for Signar. It's almost like a Signar release.
Yeah.
Because it's got a million things recently. If you look at the list of models they have now, it's absolutely out of hand. So I don't even think they care. But Signar, I think, is probably going to take a lot of attention to that. So if I was a Signar player, I would say the Morrowind releases are probably the biggest impact. If I was a Mercs player, I probably wouldn't care about them, and I would talk about the 50 solos that we just got from Riot Quest.
Riot Quest.
So many solos running around.
Yeah.
And Archons, right? Like, Archons are everywhere across the game, and they're very powerful. And, you know, we were looking at Warfare Weekend potentially having several Archons on the table in the finals.
Yeah.
Didn't quite go that way. There were only five.
Oh, so, that's it.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, there's a lot changing. And I think this has been talked about in other places. The meta hasn't caught up to that yet. And I think we'll really start seeing it at LVO, Captain Con, ATC, stuff like that, is when we'll start seeing that new meta emerge and see what shape it really takes.
Yeah.
And I think trolls are going to get a big boost too.
Yeah, I think they're hurting because just being caught in the crossfire with PT and Devourer's Host, and they haven't had a release in quite some time, so it makes sense.
Yeah, and even if you look at Legion, like, PT has started disappearing, and Ravagers aren't even being taken as much anymore. So if you're trolls and you haven't caught up to those, and those things are kind of being pushed out a little bit, then it's really not going to look attractive.
Yeah.
So Creel Company will be interesting because that's a different type of infantry. And the Dunian Archon I've played against a few times recently, and holy shit, that model is way better on the table than I think a lot of people were anticipating. I'm a little concerned about Circle having access to that thing with Morvana 2, for example, but I think we'll just have to see how that comes together.
Yeah. Ryan, how are you, sir?
Still good.
That's good. you're kind of quiet there, so I wanted to bring you back. Do you have any, like, convention memories that you're happy with this year? Like, something that kind of stood out to you?
Oh. I only really went to two this year. So like I did ATC and I did the Sioux. I was planning on doing more, but life happened and, you know, one thing led to another.
Yeah.
See, I think honestly ATC as a whole, like I'd never really done a con quite like that where it wasn't like there was a Masters or wasn't a Champions. It was just the team event. And that's what you did for 2 days. But just like the attitude of the people there, I got to meet Jay Larson. I met Will Pagani. I met Omnis in person, a bunch of the guys from Florida, people that I never even thought I would see in person, I'd ever meet. I got to say hello to them. I got to, play in an event that was entirely different than anything I had played in before, because it wasn't like, oh, well, we're just doing this because, you know, Champions is on Friday and Masters isn't until tomorrow. So like, this is just a time killer or like kind of a neat thing to do for the day. It's like, no, you came just for this. And like the team cooperativeness, just like the attitude of it was, it was really cool and really neat to see and not a thing that I've ever dealt with before. So I think that as a whole was probably like my biggest, like, I guess, memory from the year and just kind of like a weird takeaway that like, it's, you have to remember when playing and like, especially in team events, that it is very cooperative. It's not just, you know, me against you. It's my entire team theory crafting your list and practicing against it and doing what we need to do to make sure that I, you know, can play my best possible game into you. And then it's me against you. Yeah. And it was just like the prep work and everything else that went into it was just kind of really, it was really cool and really neat and just different than anything I'd done.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I think for me, it was probably just the Sioux again. That's really the only big tournament that I attended. I was at the OTC just in case one of my friend's teams lost a player, but they ended up not needing me, so that worked out. So I got to kind of just hang out and watch and enjoy the atmosphere of the OTC, which was pretty good. Say hi to some people that I don't regularly get to see, like especially the guys from Ottawa. That was nice. But the Sioux was awesome this year. I'm really happy that all of us were able to attend it. I was super excited that we were invited to the State of the Game, and Cutter got to speak to that. For me, as like, as kind of a player and a podcast host and a listener of podcasts, like that felt really cool to be part of the community there in that way. And I think Sisu, I'll be there again this year, hopefully. I intend to go, and I'll probably just play in Iron Arena, I think, next year. I'm not too dedicated to tournament-y stuff, so if I go, I'm just going to try and have some fun.
I mean, you could do what you did last year and walk around during the Masters and take pictures and then come harass me every couple minutes.
Yeah, I could do that. I could do that.
Because I'll be there.
Yeah, you damn well better be.
There's Sortilege there. I'll be there.
Yeah, it's in Toronto this year. They moved it.
Yeah, I heard. It's a little bit farther north, which, still fine.
Yeah. Cutter, you're going to be back for the Sioux, hopefully?
I should be. There's a local guy who's actually from Toronto, and he's one of the kind of up-and-coming players in our area, and he plays Kador, and I'm having that experience mentoring him into I don't want to push new players into playing certain things. I really felt like if he wanted to play competitively, playing Vlad 2 Wolves is probably the top Kador list at the moment that's well identified.
Actual Kador or Kador Lite?
Actual Kador. Because he only has Kador right now, as far as I know. So if you're doing, if you're doing the new Kador or whatever, then I think like the Zirkova 1 list is a major pain in my ass, and Vlad 3 has some good stuff going on. But Vlad 2 is amazing. And I'm having that experience with a new player where it's like, keep training him, going over his games, talking about what he could have done better, like, you know, continuing that cycle. And now it's getting like real scary because he's learning to play specifically against me and I'm trying to get him to beat me. I think that part's a lot of fun. And I look forward to seeing some of our, you know, the players in my area, going to conventions and doing that thing.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely going to make as many conventions as I can. I need to figure out what I'm doing professionally and whether or not that involves relocation or whatever. So if I relocate, my goal is to go to a place that has a strong War Machine meta. Life goals.
Yeah, so, for sure.
So the basic idea is I'm trying to grow the community here and get those people to go out, and I'll end up at a bunch of conventions. So
yeah, I remember you're talking about how your goal, or like what you've been doing this year, is you've spent a lot of time just kind of building up the people around you, which is, I think, is really admirable.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little selfish in some ways, because I want the best practice possible. And so I always want the people around me, anyone who expresses any inkling of competitive chutzpah, you know, anyone who wants to actually dig into the game, because War Machine is not easy. And playing competitive War Machine is like a job almost. So anyone who shows some dedication to that, I try to cultivate that as much as possible, because I've had years to develop my competitive play. So if I have to sit out games or whatever, like, it's not going to affect me as much. And I feel like I can contribute to those games in a way that is helpful overall. And I, you know, I'm an educator by trade. I really like that element of the community. I think a lot of people do really like helping each other out. And that's why I'm still playing the game. It's also an amazing game, but it's really the community that keeps me going.
Yeah, right on.
You're such a community-minded member, Cutter.
Yeah.
Also, chutzpah is a word that is not used often enough.
Yeah, I like to throw random vocab in there occasionally.
Well done, you.
Let's see, what else we got here before we kind of wrap it up? Your steamroller is going to come out next year?
Yeah, I got one. All right. If you want to.
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
So, way back in the Wayback Machine, okay. We all set goals for the year, like New Year's resolutions and all that kind of fun stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I remember I've made like only one of mine, and that was to play 200 games, which I did with Abby one, and then continued to play games with other casters. So, you know, I did that, but definitely didn't make any of my other ones. So I'm kind of curious, with the new year coming up, do you guys have any like resolutions for the new year? Do you have anything that you say, okay, this is definitely a thing I want to do next year?
That's interesting. I think I didn't play as much as I probably should have this past year. So maybe this year, just kind of aim at actually getting models on the table. I've been kind of focusing on like real life stuff, not kind of game stuff, but I think
I know that feel.
I want to get back into it for sure. The game I played, I just had a game on Wednesday that felt pretty good with Callus 2.
So right.
I'd like to keep doing that. You know, get some more games in, not necessarily competitive games, but at least put models on the table.
How many games? Put a number on it.
We'll say 50. How does that sound? We'll try for 50 games this year.
Okay. Cutter, how about you?
So for my upcoming year, one of the concrete goals that I want to do is I want to make it to a large convention that I haven't been to, or a large event. So that could be Lock and Load, it could be Warfare Weekend, it could be WTC. Ideally, it's all of them, but that's, you know, I'll save that for next year.
I mean, so, if you can do all three, I'd honestly be impressed.
Yeah, it would be really cool. And, you know, depending, that's definitely a priority for me when I'm looking at what kind of professional path I want to take, is something that allows me to enjoy other parts of my life, like my hobby. So that's something that I want to do, is make it to one of those three. More would be great. Continue going to the conventions that I'm familiar with in the Northeast, and, you know, down the South a little bit. I want to run this tournament series and kind of get as much feedback as I can from that. And then the idea is that it's an iterative type of environment. So run this one, reflect on it, get feedback, build another one that's better, run that one, continue doing that. So I already have this one almost set up. So I'm thinking maybe doing two of those would be really cool, because I think, I don't know if I could fit three in a year, but being able to do two of those would be neat. And yeah, I want to get the community bolstered a bit. I feel like we have to take the reins on that sometimes. And Privateer Press has been demonstrating recently that they're interesting in helping that. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. Competitive play, you know, I always want to progress, but I think those goals are more about how I'm developing as a player individually rather than how I perform specifically at events, and just hoping that that actually gets me into good placements. So
sweet.
All sounds reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you, Wolf, I don't think we talked about you.
Nope, I was just waiting for somebody to ask. I figured I'd give somebody an opening. Nicely done. Fuck, talking is hard. All right. So for me, I'm looking at a couple different things. I'm still trying to day two a master's. Haven't done that before. Haven't even gotten close, which is disappointing. But like, it's one of those weird moments where you look at it and you're like, I know I'm good enough to do this. I just haven't done it for some reason. Whether it be luck, dice, just a bad day, like, whatever. So, looking to do that. I'm going to try and win at least 5 local events. Because I get a couple throughout the year, but, like, I never really keep track of them. So, I'm going to see if I can get 5. And then I want to see if I can get at least 50 games with 4 different casters.
So you're just going to diversify your 200 this year instead of playing all Abbey 1 all the time?
I mean, I did that at literally just the Sioux. In between Twilight Imperium.
Uh-huh. I remember that.
So much Twilight Imperium.
It kept coming back. It was like, Ryan's still playing Twilight Imperium.
Yep.
Yeah. Those games take forever to end, and then when you finish one and somebody's like, all right, we should do it again. At some point, you're just like, yeah, let's do that. And it never occurs to you that it's been like 12 hours and you should maybe not.
Yeah, it's funny because when I would walk over to the Twilight Imperium tables at various conventions, people would generally look like they weren't having a good time. And then I would talk to them afterwards and they'd be like, yeah, that was a lot of fun. So there's something going on there that's a little disturbing, but I'm intrigued.
It's a lot of brain power. You got to really think through everything. You got to be 12 steps ahead. Or 4 steps behind. It's one or the other, and you're never sure which until it, you know, pans out.
That's great. All right, I think that'll do it. I think we'll wrap this up, put a bow on the year with this episode. I want to thank everybody for listening to us for the last year. It's been really fun doing Blightbringers again. We really value the people who do listen, the people who comment, the people who come up to us at shows and say, hey, you're the guys from Blightbringers, you know, like, that feels really cool. So I want to thank everybody for that. Ryan, you got anything to say about that?
Nope, just more repetition. You know, it's great to have random people message me and walk up to me. It's a little terrifying at first for, you know, various reasons. It's funny after being on Arcane Assist, there was one or two messages of like, oh, I can finally put a face with the name and the voice. And it's like, I'm as disappointing for you as I thought I would be. Because, like, I think I am, so I assume you do too.
Right.
But no, it's really just, you know, thanks to everybody for listening. Thank you to all the people who message lists and ask for advice and just come up at random conventions or random events, say hello. Thanks to Jay Larson and Muse on Minis, despite being wrong about Hellmouths, they put us up and allow us to come out and do this and then spread it to the world or the slightly smaller nerd world. So, yeah, I think that's it.
Awesome. Cutter?
Just thanks to everyone. Yeah, I don't really have anything specific to say. Thanks to you, Tyrone, for being the foundation of this whole thing. I just show up and ramble, and you guys completely kind of move on to other topics. And yeah, I even though I haven't been playing Legion as much, I still feel like I'm part of that community. I still follow conversations. I still look at things. And in general, like, I think we're all part of the greater War Machine community. And it's always good to see the community taking steps to make that feel like it's the case. So sometimes things can get contentious and CIDs or whatever, nerfs, buffs, whatever the case may be. But I'm always happy to see that the community supports itself really well, as welcoming, inclusive, and interested in becoming better than it is.
So awesome.
Thanks to everyone for that.
All right. Thank you, Cutter, for that. I will end the show as I always do, saying that the link to the Discord, if you want to come chat to us, will be in the show notes below. And I think that's good. So thank you all for listening to episode 56 of Blightbringers. We'll talk to you in the new year.
Cheers.
Aloha.
You would do that.
Someone has to.
Bye, guys.